This brings me to the behind your back sniping that goes on. How many of you ever had somebody gunning for you behind your back, friendly to your face, behind your back? You got wind that there was somebody saying stuff about you. So there's two sources for that kind of information behind your back. One is the credible source. The credible source is where it's somebody you know, you trust, you can rely on, you have a track record with them. That person comes to you and they tell you, so-and-so is saying such and such about you. How many of you ever had that happen? Or an ally, a friend came to you and informed you of something going on outside of your field of vision. Well, here's the thing. If that ever happens, my advice to you is this. Go directly to the person they told you about, but instead of accusing them, tell them what you've heard and ask the question, is that true? Now, why would you say that? Because even a friend can get it wrong. They hear the words, they interpret it through their own emotion, and now you're in a conflict because of their emotion. So you just say, is it true? And you know what? If it is true, they're going to deny it. And if it isn't true, they're going to deny it. But the point of this isn't to get a confession. It's to make it uncomfortable to snipe at you by bringing it out in the open. So you might say, oh, okay, no problem, and walk away. But then your friend comes to you and says, it's still going on. You get right back to him, hi, it's me again. You know, I just heard you were saying this about me, and I just got to know, is that true? And you just rinse and repeat until they do one of three things. They stop, become a tank, use a tank strategy, or tell you what's going on. But what if it's not a credible source? And how do you know if it's not a credible source? I need a couple of volunteers. I think I will volunteer Lisa because we talked earlier. I can read her name tag from here. And Rebecca. I'm good. Would you guys be willing to stay right there, but let me... You don't have to really do a thing, actually. Okay, cool. That's your kind of volunteer. That's a great way to... Yeah. All you have to do is let me do this. That's all I'm saying. All right, great. So imagine that we all work together in the same organization, and one day I show up at Rebecca's office door, and I say, hi, Rebecca. I've been meaning to talk to you. I see you around here all the time. I can't believe I've never gotten around to doing this. I feel terrible about that. And you know what? I feel even worse because the reason I'm here, what does Holly have against you? What is her deal? Did I already lose the name Lisa, right? Sorry. What does Lisa have against you? What's her problem with you? Do you know? And I'm just trying to plant the seed of suspicion. I'm just trying to get her thinking something about someone else. Because if I can pit them against each other, right? And I go, listen, don't tell her I told you this, because that way I can keep looking out for you. Hey, it was great talking to you. I'll see you next time. And then I'm over here and I go, hey, Lisa, how you doing? I've been wanting to talk to you forever. And I do that whole thing again. I say, you know, I was walking down the hall, and I heard Rebecca talking to the people that you work with, and I think she's out for your job. I have no other way of making sense of it. I mean, it was so disrespectful. If I were you, I would keep an eye on that. I think you got a problem. Anyway, hey, it was nice to talk to you. And well, that's exactly the way a sniper works behind the scenes. They pit people against each other. And here's what I say you ought to do anytime that happens. If it's not a credible source, if it makes no sense to you why this person is saying this thing to you, then say, do they know you're telling me this? You go, does Lisa know you're telling me this? You'd say, does Rebecca know you're telling me this? And the answer would be no, and don't tell her. That way I can look out for you. And you're going to say, you know what, let's go talk to her together. You get it? This is how you stop this behavior from happening. This is how you can put an end to gossiping and all kinds of stuff. You just say, do they know you're telling me this? They go, no, don't tell them. You say, well, then let's go talk to them together. That person's going to back off like, you know, somebody put a match in their shoe. Does that make sense to you? So let's go talk to them together. All right, Rick, third-party sniping, because I think it's helpful to be able to work with people that are doing this to each other.
Actually, before you know, not all sniping is auditory. So this can be a snipe. Silent sniping. What you do with silent sniping is you stop, look, and mirror. Rick, I noticed you go, something going on I should know about? You need to mirror because the sniper needs to understand what you're responding to, and everybody in the room needs to understand what you're responding to. So let's talk about a third-party situation. What this means is being a third party to neutralize once and for all, two people who have an issue with each other. Now, the hardest part about getting a third party involved is just to get it to happen, because let's face it, the sniper doesn't want to work it out. The sniper wants to torment the snipee from now through eternity. So sometimes we have to get higher authority involved, meaning somebody who has positional power to force us to work it out and come up with an or else. For any of you who have more than one child, especially if they're closer in age and they got into something, and you said, you're going in that room, or you're not coming out of that room until you work it out, that's exactly the principle in action. You're creating a reason to work it out. You're not asking the higher authority to be the third party. Their positional power would probably be inappropriate. People wouldn't feel comfortable. You're just asking them to say, yes, you must do this. So we come up with some neutral third party, and this neutral third party is going to go on an information gathering mission. They're going to talk to the sniper. They're going to talk to the snipee. They're going to talk to informants. They're going to talk to innocent bystanders. Based on what they discover, they'll decide who needs to be at this meeting. You know, I had an insurance agency that brought me in initially to supposedly mediate between these two people, but as I started talking to people in their organization, I saw they had a miniature Yugoslavia going on there. There were three factions that were clearly at war with each other, and then there was a 50% nothing factor, meaning half the people were being nothing people. They weren't doing anything. They weren't. But see, this is the problem with nothing behavior, is nothing is the vacuum into which all other behaviors can run amok. Nothing is something by doing nothing. So I felt it was so convoluted that we really all needed to be in the room together. And we did a version of the seminar. I didn't emphasize sniping anymore, and we're going to emphasize it today. And it was amazing, the transformation. It was literally overnight, because everybody saw what their part was in this dynamic. Let's face it, if you and I work together and I see what I do with you in the lens and you see what you do with me and we each take a half step of responsibility, we move ourselves a whole step closer in the green and we do it with half the effort. But let's talk about this in a framework of two people. So the first thing that's going to happen at this meeting is we're going to agree on higher intent. So I'm with an ex-couple once who were fighting over their kid. I begin our meeting by saying, well, you both know I spent an hour with you separately each, and I have to tell you, the thing that I'm most impressed about is how much you guys agree with each other. It was funny to watch them. They both simultaneously went. They were sitting there mirroring each other like bookends. Little did they know, I just tricked them into agreeing with each other. They both agreed with each other that I must be crazy. But in any negotiation, that counts. I said, look, correct me if I'm wrong. Do either of you want your child to be traumatized? I didn't think so. Do either of you want your child to develop emotional problems? I didn't think so. Do either of you want your child to learn this pattern of communication so they could do it someday with their spouse? I didn't think so. And then I got up, I went over to the whiteboard and said, so we're here in the best interest of David. And I made that concept visual. We'll talk about visual communication shortly. But all of a sudden, for the first time in 2 years, instead of two direct adversaries, they were two sort of allies with a very important common purpose, but a difference of opinion as to how to fulfill that purpose. That's where we start. Then the second step is we have to agree on process. How shall we run this meeting? Now, when I say agree on process, I don't mean you ask for suggestions. You tell people what the process is going to be. They will agree, because everybody tends to turn into a nothing person when they get into a meeting like this, so you can easily push them around. And the process is basically the listening process. One person speaks, the other one listens. Then after the speaker is done speaking, the listener is going to backtrack, and then they're going to clarify, asking questions to get more deep structure to make sure they understand. When the initial speaker feels they've been heard, then we're going to reverse those roles. So you just throw that out there, and does that work for everybody? And your two nothing people go, okay. Next thing we have to do is actually run the process. Now, because everybody's a nothing person, nobody's going to want to speak. But actually, that's okay. If you're the third party, what you do is you speak for the nothing person. Mary, I'm going to tell John what you're feeling. If I'm off base, just jump right in. John, I think she's feeling is this because of this and this and this. Am I on the right track here? Okay. Then this and this and that blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. And then he goes, I get that. Yeah, that makes sense. And then she goes, what? You got that? I have been telling you the same thing for 3 years. How come it took him 3 minutes? I always thought that was kind of ironic. She came in angry. He wasn't getting it. Now she's angry. He did get it. Now, he got it from me because of no great communication skill. It's the lack of triggers and associations. I am not reminding him of his mother. We have not established all these associative triggers with each other from years of marriage. Not to mention, I'm not emotionally caught up in this issue. Yes, I want to help them, but I'm not emotionally caught up. So my tone can be very neutral. So I could matter-of-factly say exactly the same words for word that she's been saying for 3 years, and the eagle will land from me where it won't because of all the other barriers. In fact, this is so consistent that I would suggest to you, you just reveal all the cards. Tell everybody what's going on. Now, remember, as a third party, you've talked to snipey, informant, innocent bystanders. You have more of a holographic understanding than anyone. Here, everybody, take your finger, turn it to the side, put it 6 inches in front of your nose. This is audience participation, great in the afternoon, and the secret to world peace. Now, close your right eye, look at your finger. Okay, now open it up, close your left eye, look at your finger. Now go back and forth a few times, right eye, left eye, right eye, left eye. Look at that finger move. Isn't that incredible? I do this 100 times a year and never get sick of it. Well, you got to entertain yourself on the road. Now, imagine your right eye and your left eye arguing over whose point of view is correct. That's absurd. They're both correct, they're both different, and when your brain puts them together, you see three dimensions. Everybody is right from their point of view. But by definition, a point of view only includes so much and leaves a lot out. So right is not the issue here. What we want is holographic understanding from people. And so if you've talked to everybody already, you have the most holographic understanding than anybody could have. So just tell everybody what's going on. Look, here's what's going on. You're doing this because of this, or this, or this. And when you act like that, you're going to think this. Well, once you think that, then your response is going to be this. When you respond like that, that's going to make you think da-da-da-da. And then, of course, and you just think of it like dealing cards, but you're dealing them all face up on the table. And what's going to happen is, because it's all been said, there's nothing to hide. And because you as a third party can be somewhat neutral about it and unemotional about it, you can just matter-of-factly tell everybody what's going on. So it sets a safety, a tone of safety for this meeting. That this doesn't have to be a big hairy deal. It's human behavior, here's what's going on, da-da-da-da-da, and there we go. And once it's all laid out, then you go back to, but I want to hear it in your own words, so John, why don't you start? And you just pick somebody to start, and then you run the process. And once everybody's been heard, now we evolve to talking about the future. What are we going to do from this day forward? You know, sometimes it's just a matter of drawing a line, all right? From this day forward, we're starting new with each other. Other times, it's a matter of coming up with a way these two people can communicate. For example, if somebody's real get it right, and another person is real get it done, and there's no flexibility or recognition of the importance of that other point of view, these two people will be at odds with each other, because to the get it right one, the get it done one's rushing forward, threat to accuracy, and to the get it done one, the get it right one's a stick in the mud, always slowing things down. So we might have to have a conversation about how can we find the perfect balance between get it done and get it right. You both are part of the same team and you're playing different roles, but how do you integrate that? So that might be part of step four. Now the meeting is over, but the process is not done. We have to meet again in a week and see how it's going. And if it's okay, we meet again in 2 weeks. And if it's okay, we meet again in 4 weeks. And at that point, if it's okay, now we can let it go. I cannot tell you how many times people in seminars have told me, oh yeah, we had this first meeting, but there was no follow-up, and it went back to the same old way. Of course it did! What are we trying to do here? We're trying to change a habit of how two people communicate with each other. Well, habits with the best of intentions are tough to break because they're habits. But if people know we're meeting again in a week, they stay conscious and accountable. 2 weeks, conscious and accountable. 3 weeks again. So now in this model, we're at least 6 weeks into the future. At that point, we got enough momentum for a new behavior. Any questions? You know, the criteria game would be perfect at this point.
Then we'll do that. All right, so we're going to move on in our pantheon of problem people. Our next problem person is the human grenade. Perfectly normal 1 minute, then somebody pulls their pin, and after a brief period of calm, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, boom, in 360 degrees. How many of you ever been around when somebody lost it? How many of you were the person that lost it when somebody was around? I'll tell you why people lose it. But first I want you to notice the difference between the grenade and the tank. It's a big and fundamental difference. So I'm going to show you the picture, see if you can tell the difference. This is the grenade. This is the tank. Let's try it again. This is the grenade. And this is the tank. Can you see the difference? What's the difference? That's why one has a target and one, everything goes. They're just exploding at 360 degrees. And that's the distinguishing characteristic. Because where the tank is control-seeking in order to get it done, the grenade is losing it because it's attention-seeking because they don't feel valued and appreciated. And I will tell you, that is exactly how to pull the pin on a grenade. Fail to give appreciation. You know, my mom used to tell me you can appreciate everyone for something. Appreciate them for coming, appreciate them for leaving. There's always something you can appreciate them for if you have a mind to, but the fact of the matter is, hey, here, do parents lose it with their kids? You bet they do, and you know why? Because kids are born with an attitude. The attitude is, this was your idea, you owe me. That's the attitude of childhood. Do managers lose it with employees? You bet they do. And why is that? Because nobody ever appreciates what managers do. When was the last time a manager heard, great managing? It doesn't happen. Do employees lose it with managers? You bet they do, and I'll tell you why. If the only time you ever see your manager is when something goes wrong, what Ken Blanchard called the seagull system of management, something goes wrong, you fly in, flap your wings, and all over everything. People do not feel valued and appreciated in that context. In fact, if you want to prevent grenades from exploding, get really good at giving appreciation, at catching people in the act of doing something right. Like what Rick did in the example earlier when he was talking with you back there behind the pretty green basket. Yes, you. Remember when he said, you know, you could actually say to the person on the phone, and say, you know, I appreciate how much you care about this. Just that moment might be enough to break through this explosion that's based on I don't feel valued and appreciated. So that's the key to it. Yes. Well, but that's the thing. Remember, we said earlier, we're not talking about personality types. I hate personality types. I know a lot of you have actually gone through these things where they told you your personality type. I had one guy walk up to me and tell me, I'm an analytical socializer. I was like, dude, that's got to be incredibly painful. You know that expression, think outside the box? Here's my expression, don't get in the box and don't put anybody else in a box either. The fact of the matter is, we're human beings and we change the way we are depending on where we are, what's going on, and what's important to us. So if you find some flexibility in your problem person, don't be surprised. But when it's the grenade happening in front of you, I'm simply saying it's not feeling valued and appreciated. It might not even be by you. And yet you have the power to do something. You have leverage in that situation to influence the way they are. So let's talk a little bit about what to do when this happens. First thing you got to do is the thing you don't really like doing, and that's get their attention. And in fact, the best way to get somebody's attention is to say their name. But the problem is, when a person is losing it, they're not aware of what's actually happening right in front of them. So in their case, you need a lot of energy to shout their name sometimes. In fact, in a moment, I'm going to test you on what I'm telling you about dealing with grenades. I'm going to lose it. And I want you to stop me, because you don't want me to hate myself. I couldn't finish the program. No, it would be wrong. I'm going to ask you to stop me by doing what I'm talking about. So my name is Rick. So what name would you shout if you were trying to get through to me and I was losing it? George? Well, you bet you're fun at a party. All right. Let's go with Rick, just for the moment. But it's not enough to say it once. You got to keep saying it until they notice that you're there. So you would say, Rick, 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 and you'd need to find the energy to get through to me. But the question is, how do you know if I'm actually losing it or if I'm just a little upset? Because if I'm just a little upset and you start shouting my name, it's going to upset me further. So there is it's something to watch for. It's a timing element. Here, just for fun, ask me what I do for a living. I'm a comedian. Ask me as loud as you can why I'm so successful. Timing.
I hope you can hear that in the peanut gallery. There's a timing element to disrupting somebody that's starting to lose it. And here's something I'd like you to repeat after me. If you wait too long, it's too late. If people get adrenalized up to a certain point, there's no turning back. That explosion's going to happen. So the key is to engage with them before it gets out of control. I mean, quite honestly, if you allow somebody to lose it even one time around you, you have become the refrigerator handle. What I'm saying is, it's in your interest to disrupt this pattern every time it's in front of you, because if it happens once, it's going to happen again. If it happens again, it's going to become a habit, repetition and intensity. So it's in your interest to engage with it and disrupt this pattern. And the way you do it is you get their attention by shouting their name sometimes and waving your hands. I know it's after lunch, so I hope you're getting this correctly. It's not shouting your name and waving their hands. So if I were to ask you to stop me from losing it, you would shout Rick over and over and wave your hands. Let's just try that one time really quick. Very good. All right. So I want you to learn the timing element for when to do this, because if you do it too quick, it doesn't work, and if you wait too long, it's too late. There's a sweet spot. And how do you know you're in the sweet spot? Because they stop talking to you and start talking to themselves out loud and unloading grievances as they start working it up. And you see people doing this in cars on the road all the time. They're on their way home, because home is where they go when they're tired of being nice to people. They're getting themselves worked up into a state. So you got to get their attention and then aim for the heart. And the way you aim for the heart is by saying these magic healing words. I don't want you to feel that way. Everybody say that. That's an honest statement, because if they feel that way, they're going to hate themselves. And if they hate themselves, they're going to lose it again. Because that's what sets people off, is low self-esteem, that self-loathing. How many of you remember when you lost it, how you felt about yourself right after? You remember? You remember the shame you carried with you? I can't believe I did that. That means you're actually primed for the next explosion. So when you tell somebody, I don't want you to feel that way, that's a sincere statement. I really don't want you to feel that way. I remember saying this at a program in Chicago, and a little old lady in the back of the room stood up. She said, really, people hate themselves when they lose it? I'm like, yes, ma'am, they do. She's like, but hate themselves? I'm like, yes, ma'am, they do. She's like, really, they hate themselves? And I'm thinking she's on the verge of a breakthrough, but then she goes, well, good. So here's the problem. She's a walking minefield for human grenades. By wanting them to hate themselves, they're going to feel low value and appreciation in her presence and lose it. So it's in your interest to shout their name, aim for the heart, and you know, you don't even have to use complete sentences. Just use these words. Rick, I don't want you. Rick, I don't want feel that. Rick, don't feel that. Rick, don't feel. Rick, don't feel that. What? That's my Shatner. Okay, so get their attention, aim for the heart, and then reduce your intensity. Start calming yourself down, and because you raise your energy to meet them where they are, they are going to follow you into a calmer state. So be, Rick, I don't, Rick, don't feel, Rick, don't feel. That's the way it works. And then you give them time off for good behavior. Not that they've had any, but that they might have some. Because, you know, if you try to address this with somebody immediately after they started to explode, their system is still overstimulated with adrenaline, and they're not going to be able to have a conversation without losing it again. So what you do is you buy some time. You say, let's take a moment. Or let's take five. Or let's come back together in an hour. I mean, you put a little cushion around it so people can calm themselves down. So I want you to learn this timing element. So I want you to watch closely. And when I stop talking to you and start talking to myself out loud, that's your signal to start shouting my name. What's my name? Waving whose hands? Yours. That's right. All right. So here we go. Watch closely. I'm counting on you now. You don't want me to hate myself, I hope. All right. So I am going to lose it, and I'm going to lose it for a good reason. I don't even have to fake it. I have a very good reason to lose it, because you probably can't tell this about me, but I'm a little compulsive. Well, I am. Every time I've done this kind of program, and this goes all the way back to the hundreds that Rick and I did together and the ones I do on my own, on the airplane leaving here, I will review this day, and I will think of all of you. I'll see that green basket. I'll remember you. I will remember the things you said. I'll remember you. I'll remember you. I will. You calling me George, that'll be there. I will remember, Norman, I'll remember the things that happened during the day, and I will be asking myself one question: how could it be better? And I tell you today, this program you're getting is the result of 30-some years of mutual intention to develop the most refined, best impactful program we can create. So you'd think we'd be satisfied, but nevertheless, somehow, it never ceases to amaze me that we come back from lunch, no matter what we do, and look around the room, and there's people giving us this facial expression. Except for the nice people who do it like this. And I don't know why I bother, because I'm leaving my family behind, my cat. That's very good. You got it. That's that moment. And by the way, thanks to those of you who cared enough to give. And for the rest of you, thanks a lot. But that's that timing piece. You get how powerful that is? I mean, that's truly an amazing effect that you can have with people if you're willing to step up your energy and engage with them. I have a fun story to tell you about this. I knew this couple. I'm going to call them Tom and Mary. When they got married, they were deeply in love. Somehow, 6 months into their marriage, this guy got his pin pulled at work. Somebody dismissed something he put a lot of time and energy into. He felt dismissed and unappreciated, worked himself up into a state all the way home. By the time he pulled into the driveway, he was ready to blow. And he walks through the front door, and his wife goes, "Hi, honey," and that's all it took. Boom! 360 degrees, starts screaming all around, "I don't know why I bother, nobody cares." And she doesn't know what to do with it because she'd never seen it before, and so she allowed it to happen. Well, guess what? He went through the whole cycle, full of self-loathing, stormed out of the house, got in the car, peeled out of the driveway 90 miles an hour, and when he came home, he tried to wait till she was asleep. I mean, you know, the shame that surrounded it. Well, that's all it took, because now 2 weeks later, it happened again. And then 1 week later, it happened again, and she was not resourceful. She did not know what to do with it. Pretty soon, it was a nightly event. He'd walk in the door and lose it. The house became the refrigerator handle for losing it. And she said after 1 year it was annoying, after 2 years it was really irritating, and after 3 years she felt like giving new meaning to "Till Death Do We Part." And one morning she woke up seething with all this resentment. She went, "Wait a minute, that's not like me. I'm a loving person, and that's the way I am with the people I love." Well, there's a name for that. What I just described is a form of grenade prevention, in a sense. It's Pygmalion power. It's the ability we have to shape one another. This is one of the most powerful tools that you can have in dealing with your fellow human beings. It's actually based on a study done in the Chicago school system in 1968. Two researchers, Rosenthaler and Jacobson, went into the school system. They picked some teachers. They said, "You're the most gifted teachers we've got. We'd like to give you gifted students and see what you can do with them." The teachers were flattered, they eagerly agreed, and at the end of the year, the researchers came back and said, "How was it?" And they were like, "Man, it was the best year of my teaching career. Unbelievable. My gifts as a teacher were so obvious to me. These kids, their minds were like open books. They found novel applications of the things they were learning. It was incredible. I wish I could always have gifted students." And Rosenthaler and Jacobson said, "Well, maybe you can." Because those kids were actually chosen at random from all the kids in the school system. The teacher's response was, "Dude, we really are gifted." And then the researcher said, "Maybe, but you were also chosen at random." This is actually published. You can Google it. It's called Pygmalion Effect in the Classroom. And we all know the lesson of it is that people rise or fall to the level of our expectation. Your parents knew this. How many of you remember when you were a kid and your moms or your dad said to you, "If I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times. You remember that? And after the first 100, you didn't need to hear it anymore. You'd internalize the lesson. And if it was a good message, you internalize it. If it was a negative message, you internalize it. My mom, when I was growing up, she used to say, "Ricky," actually call me Ricky, Ricky, Ricky. I wouldn't answer the first few times. She'd go, "Ricky, Ricky, Ricky." I go, "Yeah, Mom." She said, "If I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times, you could do anything you put your mind to." Mom said that to me the whole time I was growing up. But then she'd ruin it. She'd go, "But you won't." That's that's Pygmalion power. I remember my father-in-law saying to me, "All you want to do is argue." And I was like, "That is so not true." Well, that's Pygmalion power. That's actually reinforcing what you don't want, shaping a person's self-concept when you're around. I say, if you have this power, use it wisely. break the connection to what you don't want and shape the connection to what you do want. And that's exactly what happened with Tom and Mary, because Tom walked in the door that night. He started to lose it. She used the tactful interruption. She started shouting his name and waving her hands. Tom, 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 that's not like you. Even though it was like him. And then she told him how she wanted him to be as if he was. She said, you're a loving person, and you know the person, when you walk through that door, the person loves you more than anybody in the world, and that's how you treat me. And he was like ashamed, embarrassed. He walked out the door, climbed in the car, peeled out of the driveway 90 miles an hour, came back a couple hours later. They didn't talk about it. Next night, he walks in the door, starts to lose it. She does it again. Tom, 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 that's not like you. You're the kind of person who knows when you walk through the story with a person who loves you more than anyone in the world, that's the way you treat me. Man, he couldn't believe it. She said it took 3 weeks to change a three-year-old behavior. And that is what we're talking about, is a three-year-old's behavior. 3 weeks. Because she said the first day of the fourth week, he walked through that door a changed man. He walked in like this. I know. But that's Pygmalion power. That's where you're shaping the way a person thinks about themselves. So what I say is, when people do what you don't want them to do, tell them it's not like them, and then describe how you want them to be as if that's the way they are. And what I think you'll find is people jump at the chance to be the better idea of themselves that you give them. They will jump at it. And likewise, on the rare occasion when they do the thing you wish they'd always do, act like it's normal. Say, that's what I like about you. Reinforce it. Shape it. Strengthen it. It's one of the most powerful tools you've got. You know, this is probably as good a time as any to tell you guys this. I know Rick and I were discussing this at lunch. Of all the audiences we've ever worked with, so this is what we like about you. This is from our hearts to your hearts. Of all the audiences we've ever talked to, you guys are without a doubt the most recent. We just wanted to acknowledge you for that. It's what we like about you. So with that, thank you, and I want to talk about the know-it-all. As we said earlier this morning, this is the person that knows 98-99% of anything. They're happy to tell you about it for hours on end, but they won't listen to your clearly inferior ideas. And the thing I think you need to know about the know-it-all is that that closed mind aspect of them is the only problem. Otherwise, you would admire and respect this person for what they know. I'm sure of it. These are knowledgeable, competent people whose flaw is that they are afraid of not knowing. So they block the things they don't think of themselves. It's a closed system problem. And what you also need to know is that you have to have a flexible back to deal with them. You have to. If the goal is to open their mind to some new information or new ideas, let's say they know 98% and you've got the missing 2%. Okay? Let's say that they say, this is how it's going to be, A, B, C, D, and F, and you're listening and you hear E is missing, and the E is important. You've got to find a way to introduce that E. Well, then you better be prepared and you better have a flexible back. Otherwise, just change your attitude and live with it. That's the way I'm thinking. So what do I mean by flexible back? There is a certain amount of obsequiousness involved in dealing with know-it-alls. A certain amount of humbling yourself on the outside in order to humor their concept of themselves, in order to get them to consider you. Certain bit of, oh, great one, though I am but a flea, allow me to occupy a moment of your clearly incredibly valuable time. So there's a certain amount of that involved. And you better know what you're going to say before you ever say a word, because if you're wrong in any particular, everything you say will be discredited by the piece that's wrong. So you got to know your what, your who, your where, your when, your how, and your why before you ever say a word. Be prepared. Then, backtrack respectfully. It's what they require of people. It makes a difference in the way that they are with you. And what I mean by backtrack respectfully is, unlike with most people where a few keywords is enough, with the know-it-all you have to say back everything. Because as you say their words, they get to enjoy them again. In fact, their response will be, yes, it was as brilliant as I thought it was. I can tell as you're saying it. So basically you're going to say, oh, great one. If I understand you correctly, if I'm going to be obsequious to you for a moment, you're clearly inventable time. We're going to A, B, C, D, and F. Is that correct? And the know-it-all is going to say, yes, that is exactly what I'm saying. And that's when you say to them, their doubts and desires. You blend with their doubts and desires. What do I mean by that? Fact is, know-it-alls dismiss you in very finite ways. Though they have this incredible amount of knowledge and ability, they have just a few ways they shut you down. They're the predictable things they always say. Things like, we don't have the time. We don't have the budget. We don't have the staff. It's that thing they say to fend everybody off. And if you can predict it, you can plan for it by saying it to them first. You go, oh, great one. If I understand it's A, B, C, D, and F. And they go, yes, it is. You know, I realize we don't have the time, the budget, or the staff. Now they can't say that. You took that away from them. Then you present your views, your ideas, your information, not as statements to which they could deflect or react, but as questions, as if you're running your information by them so they can shine the light of their brilliance upon it. So it would sound something like this. I'm curious what would happen if it were A, B, C, D, E, and F. Or if you have a better idea, what would happen if we were to X, Y, Z this? And because these are knowledgeable, competent people, and because your idea holds water and carries weight, they have to think about the answer to it, and as they run it through their knowledgeable system, there's a good chance they're going to arrive at a place where they go, you know, I've been thinking, and this is how we're going to do this. We're going to X, Y, Z this. And you're thinking, wait a minute, that was my idea. So to protect yourself from having your ideas stolen away simply by introducing them into a closed system in the form of a question, you might try using documentation. You might actually document your idea before sharing it with them so that when you show it to them, it's like, you know, this, the written word is actually more powerful than the spoken word when you use them together. It's like, I'm curious, what would happen if we were to X, Y, Z this? And now it's clear who owns it. You get that? If you're really paranoid, get it notarized. But the basic idea is you're running it by them. Use documentation in this final piece, and I actually learned of my favorite example of this while in Ohio presenting a program like this some years ago. You want to turn them into mentors. You know-it-alls have two lists of people in their mind, people that know that I know it all and people that don't know that I know it all. Guess which list you want to be on with them. The people that know that I know it all get more permission than the people that don't know that I know it all. And here's how you do it. You turn them into a mentor. My mom used to say you can learn from anyone what to do, what not to do, but you can learn from anyone. So you turn them into a mentor. Find some area where they know something that you'd like to learn and ask them to teach it to you. So here's the example. Years ago, a woman named Penny, and I love stories like this because they hold together so nicely. A woman walked up to me. She said, I did that mentor thing. I said, tell me your story. She said, when I was really young, I worked for the Bank Ohio system, and I wanted to be, you know, Captain Kirk on the bridge of my own starship. You probably don't know this, but James Tiberius Kirk was the youngest captain in the history of Starfleet in the 24th century. They gave him a starship at the age of, what, 22, I think? I mean, it's astonishing. Well, that's what Penny wanted. She wanted to be, you know, rise in the ranks that quickly in a banking system. But her problem was a guy named Frank. You get why I like this story? Penny, Frank, bank. Okay. And every time Penny tried to contribute or participate, Frank would dismiss her as young and inexperienced. He would say, ah, Penny, if you'd been in the system as long as I have, you would have learned something. We tried that 10 years ago and it does not work. Ah, Penny, if you'd been around for a while, I'm sure you would understand. You can't do that because... And no matter what she said, he would dismiss her and diminish her because of her youth. But Penny, like Jim Kirk, was undaunted. There's always a way, right? She was undaunted. I'm actually, at this point, there's just two of us talking, I think. But at any rate, undaunted, here's what Penny did. She waited for her opportunity, and it presented itself in the form of a proposal for a banking product from Frank. And you know, when a know-it-all presents an idea, it is so stacked in their favor that nobody knows how to counter it. So when he presents this product idea, it's like, you know, researched, documented, backed up, no refuting it. Penny took her copy back to her office, got a legal pad, And all she did was take the words over here and hand write them over here. That's it. No thinking required. Just take this, write it over here. She got about 10 pages that she hand wrote, paper clipped it to the top of Frank's proposal, walked up to him in the hallway and said, "Frank, I think you can see that I've spent a great deal of time studying this proposal. And I have to say, it's so obvious to me how much knowledge you carry with you from all the years you've spent in this system. And I want to learn from you. I want you to teach me what you know. I aspire to be like you, oh great one." And Frank dismissed her. He said, "Ah, Penny, if I were younger, I might have the time." But she said, from that day on, whatever Penny wants, Penny gets. And that's how you deal with know-it-alls. And you want to know the great irony of this? The only people that can't take that step are know-it-alls. You got it? So that's how you deal with know-it-alls, turn them into a mentor. And we're going to kind of jump track here for the sake of me taking off. And I'm going to switch actually to talking for a little bit about the nice people, the yes people and the maybe people. So what do I mean by a yes person? That's the person that you come to and you say, "Can you have it done for me by 2 o'clock? And they say, "Yes." So you come back at 2 o'clock and you go, "Where is it?" And they say, "What?" And you say the thing you said that would be done by 2 o'clock. And they say, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't get to it because," and they give you all their excuses. How many of you have dealt with this behavior? This is a person that's saying yes and not following through. It's a completely unreliable situation. Now, why would they say yes to you? Well, there's only two reasons why a person says yes and doesn't follow through that I'm aware of: fear and disorganization. That's it. They're either afraid to tell you the truth, something about the way you look or sound that makes them think this is what you need them to say to get along with them, or they don't actually know how to follow through on the thing they agreed to do. Now, what's the maybe person? Maybe person is the person that can't make up their mind. And that, look, these things happen to all of us. Let me ask you this. How many procrastinators do we have in the room? Quick show of hands if you're a procrastinator. So the joke is the real procrastinators never got their hands up. They just turned to you and said, "Do you think I'm a procrastinator? Because I'm not really sure if that's a..." What's the deal? Why can't people make up their minds? And the answer is, again, fear and disorganization. Is there anybody in this room that is a highly organized person, so good at getting things done that people are in awe of you? There's usually at least a few people. Anybody like that in here? All I need is one. I see them pointing at somebody. So would you say that you're a fairly well-organized person? Yes, you in the blue. You would. What's your name? You're Pat. So, Pat, you're an organized person. Let me ask you this. Doesn't it strike you as a bit silly that people think that's such a big deal? Isn't there some party that's like, what is with people? It's not that hard, right? And that's because, and tell me if I'm wrong, you have systems. You know how to process a decision. You know how to track something from point A to point B and benchmark it along the way. You paid attention to it. You acquired some systems. You apply those systems. You get results. And that's what we find with organized people. But nice people who are disorganized, and by the way, you can be a nice person who's organized, but nice people who are disorganized, and by the way, you can be disorganized in one situation and highly organized in another situation, but nice people who are disorganized don't have systems for whatever it is. They just don't know how to do it. They might know everything over here and nothing in this one discrete situation, but that's the problem. So it's fear and disorganization. In both cases, the pattern holds. Your goal is reliability. You want a commitment you can count on and decisions in a reasonable amount of time. And that's the goal. And here's how we get there. First of all, you got to make it safe. You got to make it safe to be honest. How do you do that? Well, you talk people talk. You talk about us. You talk about how we are. You talk about as a get along, as an approval relationship. You know, we're in this together. It's important that I can count on you and you can count on me because other people are counting on us. That's people talk. And you do it in a friendly way, a comforting way. You know, when somebody messes up and they don't follow through, instead of confronting them and saying, you said you'd do it and you didn't do it, thus increasing their fear the next time you're around, and fear blocks our ability to think clearly, instead of doing that, that's the time to say, I know you meant to do it. I'm sure you meant to do it. Obviously, something got in the way. What was it? And you bring to the surface whatever their excuses are. They were going to give them to you anyway. Only now they're giving them to you because they're getting safe with you to talk about them. They say, well, I couldn't get to it because the phone kept ringing. I couldn't get to it because I had all this stuff on my desk. How many of you heard these kind of excuses? And by the way, we are in the age of information. We have more information pouring into our life through more and more channels all the time. It is a lot to deal with, right? I mean, you better have systems. The more this is going on, you better have systems because it's getting to be pretty intense. So here, let me just show you something. Here we are in the age of information, and a piece of information comes into our life. Well, if you're a disorganized person, and that information comes into your life, and you don't know what to do with it, I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen to it. You're going to put it in the I don't know what to do with it pile. And then another piece of information is going to come into your life. And if you're a yes person, or maybe you're going to be excited about that, because it means that piece of information will no longer be alone. You put it in the I don't know what to do with it pile, and it keeps coming in, and the pile keeps growing, and one day you walk in there and you go, oh man, that's a mess. I got to get organized. Well, here's what a disorganized person thinks organization looks like. They move it to the I didn't find out what to do with it pile in order to make room for the I don't know what to do with it. And time passes, and one day they go, oh, I got to get organized. So they move the didn't know to the never found out, the don't know to the didn't know, thus making room for all the new I don't know what to do with it. And one day they go, oh, I got to get organized. So you know what they do then? They file it, they put it in storage boxes and tape it up. Now what does Pat do? What does the organized person do? I'll tell you. You tell me if I'm wrong. If a piece of information comes into your life and you don't know what to do with it, I'm guessing you do this with it. And you know why? Because you know if it's really important, more of it will show up. And that is a system. That's a system. So what I'm saying is bring to the surface what their excuses are. Find out what's in the way, what they don't know how to do. Do it nicely because this is when nice counts. And then help them. You know, there's an old saying, feed a person a fish and they've had a fish. But if you teach a person how to fish, they can have fish. That can't be it. What's that? They have a what? They have, teach a person how to fish, they have a hobby. Teach a person how to fish, they'll get in a boat and swim around all day and drink beer. Feed a man a fish for if he has that fish for a day, it gets a little old. But he can eat it. But if you teach him how to feed his fish, they multiply and he has more fish. That I guess what I'm trying to say is you've got to help them. And fish. I guess that was really where I was going. You got to help them. You got to put it together for them. You got to show them how to get it done, how to make it happen. Now, I've had people tell me, and these were get it done folks, control seeking, action oriented people, I don't have time for that. I have my own work to do. And I'm like, you know, I believe you, but you don't have time not to have time for that. This is the ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure in my experience. If I had to choose between an organized person without people skills and a disorganized person with people skills, and I'm not saying that's mutually exclusive, but in my example, if I had to make that choice, I would always pick the person with people skills because they're harder to learn than getting organized. That's how easy it is to get organized. So with that in mind, you got to help them, you got to connect the dots, you got to teach them your system, and then you have to build on that relationship. You have to shape their idea and confidence that they can do these things on their own. And the way you do that is when they get it right, you thank them. and point it out so they know what they did right. You know, if I ask you to do something for me and have it done by 2 o'clock and I come and get it and you have it ready at 2 o'clock, that's not the time to take it and run. That's the time to stop for a moment and say, you know what? I asked you to do that and you did it. You know what I call that? That's integrity. That's a rare thing in today's world. I'm so grateful to you for doing what you said. And in that moment, you're actually strengthening. That's Pygmalion power. You're building relationship. You know what happens? 3 or 4 times with any system, anybody learns that system. That's just a fact of the matter. And the best part is, that person would never dream of letting you down because you invested in the relationship. Get along, approval-seeking behavior. But what if they don't get it right? What if it doesn't get done? What if you come back after all that time, you taught them the system, you come in, and again they go, oh, I meant to, but, and they give you the next batch of excuses. Well, that's not the time to get angry, even though that might be how you feel. Instead, what you do is turn it into a learning moment. You know, I'm sure you meant to. Obviously, this got in your way. If I ever came and asked you again to do this same thing in the same amount of time, how might you do it differently so that you could succeed at it? And you build the relationship. It's like that classic story. It's an IBM story from many years ago, where a guy gets called to his boss's office, and he walks in, and the boss says, you know, here's what happened. You were supposed to do this thing, and it was supposed to make us a lot of money, and instead it wound up costing us a lot of money. And the guy was like, so am I fired? He said, fired? We just invested a lot of money in your education. We want a return on that investment. What have you learned from this, and how will you apply it to the next time at bat? Does that make sense to you? So you're building, building, building. You know, success breeds success, and failure is a doorway to learning. So if you play it right, you're building relationship with the yes person and the maybe person, and actually building relationship that you can count on for years to come. So that's really it. That's all I'm going to have time to share with you today. I'm going to leave the rest of it in Rick's hands. Wait. Oh, very sweet. I can prove it. I have my bags. My bags are packed. I'm ready to go. Before I go, I just wanted to tell you I'm very pleased about something. This is my new book. I didn't bring any here today. It is for sale at your favorite booksellers. It's on Amazon, Kindle, Barnes and Noble's, Nook, all of it. It's called How to Click with People, The Secret to Better Relationships in Business and in Life. This was my best shot at taking my best lessons of all the work I've done over the last 30-some years and boiling it down so I could hand it off to people like my daughter and say, take this and use it well. Thank you. God bless you. I'm done. I'm out of here. Thank you very much.